you can't really ring Sir Richard Branson up and say, can we have half an hour's chat? But you can by saying, will you appear on my podcast? Run a podcast, because people will find you there and will understand that you know more about this area than anyone else.
James Cridland is the radio futurologist who launched the world's first streaming radio mobile app and edits Pod News, the podcasting industry's leading daily newsletter.
He's advised the BBC and ABC Australia, winning the inaugural Ambies International Impact Award in 2025.
Something for your ears when your eyes are busy. That's my definition of a podcast. Spotify is now claiming 7 million podcasts, but the more important number is how many are active, how many are currently being made, how many are your competitors when you are talking to podcast guests, when you are trying to launch new shows or launch new episodes. And that number, it's not anywhere near as large as that 7 million. It's only about 300,000. That's not a big number.
Is Pod News ran only by you? Which country is after the US in terms of how many podcasts they put out there? What's happening with the radio now? Why should a business start a podcast? How do you think AI is influencing podcasting at the moment? How do you see the future of podcasting and also podcasting 2.0 coming?
Even though podcasting is so successful, we've still got so far to grow.
Hello guys, welcome to a new episode of the Pod Files. Bogdan Bratis here as usual, and I have here James Cridland, who is joining us from Brisbane, from Australia at the moment. And I must tell you guys, this is going to be a great episode, because once I looked at his bio, the entire bio was full of brands and full of projects, and he has been in the industry longer than I was born. He's a really, really, really influential name in the podcasting world. He's also the editor of Pod News. Pod News is one of the best source for podcasting news on the internet. So if you want to know anything about podcasting, Pod News is the place to learn about that. And also he has started various audio-related ventures and projects, and he's going to tell us more about that. And he also was on the advisory board for Captivate. Captivate is a podcast hosting solution. And then also on Podcast Show London, who is a great podcasting event that is taking place yearly in London. I never had a chance to go there, but I'll do maybe next year. And then also he's a visionary and a contributor to the Podcasting 2.0, which is always a discussion about podcasting 2.0, like what it is and how is that working and where is it going to be, like something that people will use in podcasting and all the podcast players and hosting providers and all that. So James, welcome to the show. Welcome to the Podfiles. How's it going?
Well, thanks so much for asking. Yeah, it's going good. It's going good.
James, tell us a little bit more about yourself first thing first, and tell us how you got into podcasting to start with. I'm really interested to find out, that story.
I first got into podcasting way back in 2005, very early in 2005. So podcasting wasn't very old at that point. Apple hadn't even put it into the iPhone. I was working for a radio station in the UK, and we saw what people were doing with podcasting, and we thought, that sounds good for us. So I think we were the first radio station in the UK to produce a daily podcast every single day.
It was on BBC, right?
Yeah, it was on Virgin Radio, Richard Branson's station. And so we started doing that in March of 2005. I think we got both some great content out there, but we even got some advertising, which we called podvertising. I think the UK government was one of the first to advertise, and I think Orange, the mobile phone company, which of course is long gone, was also one of the first to advertise then as well. So it was good to get involved there. And as you say, I worked at the BBC for a while as well, and have worked for lots of different broadcasters, across the world. And I started writing a newsletter all about podcasting in 2017, which is what I'm still doing now.
Which is Pod News, right? So how did you come up with the idea of starting Pod News? Why you felt like Pod News is needed in the podcasting space?
Well, so I was at a I was at a podcast. I was at a radio conference. In Los Angeles, and it was called the Worldwide Radio Summit. And I think I may have been the worldwide bit of that, but I enjoyed going there. And I was chatting to a friend of mine in the bar afterwards, and he leant over and he said, "James, where are you getting news about podcasting from?" And I said, "Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't think there really is anywhere, is there?" And so he looked at me and he said, maybe you might want to think about that. And so 2 weeks after that, I thought, oh, yeah, maybe that's a thing. And so started doing it. So it was very much, you know, I'd done a lot of work online. I'd written a weekly newsletter about radio, which I still do. But I figured that there was a real opportunity here for the podcasting world because it was growing and growing, but there really wasn't any news about it. So, so I started doing it back in May of 2017.
Is Pod News ran only by you? Is it you taking most of the decisions there?
Yeah, I make all of the decisions because it's just me. I have somebody that does a very good job of doing the advertising sales for it. And thankfully, I've got somebody who does the accounts as well. But in terms of the website, in terms of all of the tech behind the website as well as the editorial, it's all me. So so it's a fun job.
So you have a bit of web development experience as well.
Yeah, why, that's, yeah. Mm-hmm. So very much so. So I mean, it, you know, it's PHP and JavaScript. It's very very old fashioned, but it does the job quite happily. But and specifically because I wanted to make it as easy as possible to produce a good product. I know what you can do if you can, you know, get code to do the layout for you and do various things. But yeah, so, that means that I retain the control over it, which is a useful thing as well.
So how does a day in your life look like when it comes to creating these stories for Pod News? Like, what are you looking for in making sure that, you know, the stories are relevant and they are notable enough and all that? If somebody wants to, for example, submit a press release to Pod News, which I've seen loads of companies do that in the podcasting space, what do they need to ensure that they, obviously, most of it, it's on your website and it's written clearly there, but I'm sure that you are interested in certain topics and maybe some topics really, like, we don't want to cover those. So, like, tell me more about that.
Yeah, and there's always a bunch of interesting topics which I'm there going, oh, do I really have to cover this again?
What's the most covered kind of like piece of news on the website? What have you seen annoying?
I mean, it really depends where we are and what sort of point we're at in the industry. But an awful lot of people who are, this podcast has moved from this company to another company to sell advertising and those sorts of things. And those are important pieces of information, but, you know, it's not really the top of my list for things that I find exciting. So, you know, I mean, really, from my point of view, I think I'm sort of relatively unique in that, you know, you can tell that I'm a Brit from my accent, but I live here in Australia. I've worked for companies in Canada, in the US. Podcasting, more than any other media industry, podcasting is very, very global. It's a very worldwide thing. There are no particular, you know, big differences in between podcasting in the US and podcasting in Australia or the UK, for example. And so therefore, actually, it's quite useful having that global view. So I enjoy, you know, picking apart what some individual countries are doing, enjoy understanding what the differences are between some companies, but also very much, you know, the reason why podcasting is so successful, the reason why podcasting has done so well is that it's open. And anyone can do it. There's no signing of agreements that has to happen. There's no program director or creative, you know, head of creative content somewhere that's making a decision on whether or not to carry your show or not. At the end of the day, everyone can be in the same podcast app as Joe Rogan or as, you know, any number of other people, you know, the Kelsey brothers or whoever you might, you know, want to point at. And I think that's a really exciting thing. So, yeah, so, you know, I think anything that reinforces that, I would love to cover. And anything that threatens that as well, of course, I would like to cover too.
How do you see the future of podcasting and also podcasting 2.0 coming along as well? Like, what are your thoughts on what's happening right now?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, podcasting is always in an interesting state of flux as different sets of companies come in and say, we are the next big thing. There's clearly a lot of conversation around video at the moment. There's clearly a lot of conversation around, you know, making sure that, you know, podcasting, you know, has lots of video. That's a bit of a worry in terms of the openness of the industry. If we give control of podcasting to YouTube or to Spotify, podcasting means the world to us. It doesn't to YouTube. We are a tiny, tiny sliver of what YouTube cares about, really. And the same really goes for Spotify as well, in terms of revenue, in terms of total users, in terms of all of that kind of thing. So I think, you know, we just need to be careful, you know, in terms of, you know, in terms of that side. And that's why, you know, things like podcasting 2.0, things that offer additional features for audiences, additional features for listeners, is a really important thing. And so that's one of the, you know, one of the things that I'd like to get behind as much as possible to make sure that we don't just give, here's an industry that we've grown to 750 million hours a week. Isn't this industry fantastic? There you go, Google, it's yours now. I think that that would be the wrong thing to end up doing. So I'm quite keen that we don't end up doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've seen what Spotify is doing. Basically, they so SaaSPod is a podcast hosting provider. We're not huge like Buzzsprout or Captivate or anything like that, but we are getting there, and we are adding features to the platform at you know, along our podcast production services. And we had difficulties in getting podcast analytics from Spotify, because what they do, they download the episodes from your RSS mm-hmm. feed into their directory and on their own servers, and then you cannot take the data from there. So it becomes literally impossible for new podcast hosting providers like SaaSPod to provide analytics. So what we end up doing is send the users to Spotify for podcasters or for creators or however it's called now, because they changed names quite a few times over the years. They get the data there. Now, what do you think about that? Do you think that's fair?
you're talking about a technical thing called pass-through, and I would rather mm-hmm. that Spotify offered pass-through for more companies, particularly smaller ones. If we give control of the industry to companies like Spotify, then they can make those choices. The reason why Spotify offers that pass-through, so for larger companies like Buzzsprout and Captivate and RSS.com and many others, that Spotify is still downloading that audio directly, but they're not for some of the newer, smaller podcast hosts. And they are, my understanding is, putting quite a few barriers up to stop doing that, some of the newer hosts. And I think that that's a bit of a shame. And it would be great if they were to offer that to anyone. And perhaps, you know, it comes down to an organization like the Podcast Standards Project or a similar organization, some kind of industry body, that if you're part of that, you've signed up to do various things, then, you know, then that should be enough for a Spotify. But on the other side, if you look at YouTube, for example, YouTube has zero pass-through for anyone.
Zero, exactly.
So from that point of view, you know, you're still in a much better position from Spotify's point of view than you are from YouTube. So a lot of this comes down to that issue of why is open podcasting so important to keep, and what can we do to, you know, hopefully keep it?
Yeah, because that's the beauty of podcasting. You can get on loads of platforms. You can own your actual content. Even though you put it on a third-party hosting provider, you still pay for that hosting or own that bit of information there. And then you can move it from hosting provider to another hosting provider and so on. So you can do so many things. And that's the beauty of podcasting, in my opinion, is like that that thing that YouTube companies like YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, I mean, some of the companies that are trying to create certain gates around certain industries, like podcasting, for example. Now, when you talk about YouTube, for example, you think about video, and most people consume video on YouTube. Also, there's Netflix as well for films and stuff like that. But to me, having this openness, it's what makes podcasting a great place to be in. Like you said, it's a shame that companies do this, but hopefully, you know, things will start to standardize a little bit and things will get on a better course in the future. Okay, so that's great. So now radio, right? So I drive my car and I sometimes play, you know, BBC One or other radio stations, and I listen to radio sometimes. I do also tend to listen to podcasts in the car as well, and there's a competition there for me sometimes. Do I want to listen to a podcast? Do I want to listen to radio? Like, what's happening with the radio now? Because obviously radio is still here, and people predicted that radio is going to be away, and also people predicted that TV is going to go away, and it's not. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, people predict that TV will go away, and it is going away slowly, and radio is going away slowly. But if you look at radio, so for example, in the UK where you are, 89% of people, I think, in the UK listen to the radio once a week. It's a tremendous figure. It's way, way higher than podcasting is. If you look at total consumption, total time spent listening, radio is 6 times bigger than podcasting. So radio has over 1 billion hours a week consumed in the UK. Podcasting is just 111 million, which is still very large. I mean, it's still 10% of the time that we spend with audio. But radio is still very much larger. Having said that, radio is definitely an old person's medium now. It is definitely skewing older in terms of the people who are tuned into it, and certainly the people who listen to it the most. And so, you know, that is something that, you know, if you were to look in the future in, you know, 20 years' time, some of radio's biggest listeners will unfortunately no longer be with us in 20 years' time, because they are very old. And so I think that is something just to bear in mind. We are moving slowly, much more slowly than anybody thought, but we are moving slowly into an on-demand world, not a live world. For the majority of the audio that we consume, the majority of the video that we consume as well. And so, you know, more use of Netflix, more use of, you know, the BBC iPlayer, ITVX, all of those sorts of things, and less consumption of live TV. And, you know, and radio is very similar. So I think it's very exciting for the world of podcasting. It means that there will be far, far fewer people going, did you see that show last night on the telly, you know, because that doesn't really happen anymore. You know, it still, as we currently are, you know, podcasting being far, far smaller than radio, which means that podcasting has got so far to grow. It's a tremendous good news story for us that even though podcasting is so successful, we've still got so far to grow. And I think that's great news for all of us who work in this medium.
Mm-hmm. So definitely you see a lot of growth happening in the podcasting world. What I've noticed is that, because you mentioned that you like to see what happens in other countries, what I've seen is podcasting is really, really popular in the US. However, other countries, they are lagging behind. For example, in the UK, it is popular, like shows like the Stephen Bartlett, Diary of a CEO, one of the greatest podcast on business and stuff like that here in the UK. and there's Joe Rogan in the US and all that. But what do you think happens internationally on that space? Like, which country is after the US in terms of how many podcasts they put out there, do you think?
Well, yes. And you can look at the success of different markets in lots of different ways. So if you look at consumption, if you look at people listening to podcasts every week, actually the US, the UK and Australia is quite are all quite close. We've all this year broken 50% in terms of per month. So when you're looking at everybody out there, half of them, whether it's in the UK, the US or Australia, are listening to at least a podcast a month. That's really nice. So actually the consumption data isn't too different. And when you have a look, by the way, at total time spent with podcasting, the US is 7.7 hours on average a week. And in the UK, it's 7.7 hours on average a week. It's really weirdly exactly the same. So the consumption isn't actually different. Where the differences come is the differences in the monetization and the differences in who are making these particular shows. So there aren't that many American shows in the top charts in the UK, but there are some, Joe Rogan obviously being one of those. I think the last time I looked, there were three US shows in the top 20, I think something like that. So clearly UK podcasting is doing very well, but you've also got, you know, just the amount of content that there is in the US. Of course, there's going to be much more US, you know, content available there. So, you know, so that's sort of interesting having a look at. But, you know, making the money, though, is a very different story. And the last time I looked at these figures, which was about a year or so ago, the UK was earning about a fifth of the money that the US market was earning when you correct it for the size of the country, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So an hour's worth of podcasting earns a fifth less in the UK than it does in the US, and Australia is earning a little bit less as well, but nowhere near as low as just a fifth as it is in the UK. And I think there are a number of different reasons for that. I think one of the reasons is that the advertising industry is a bit slower to catch on in other countries. And I think also, you know, you do have a very strong public service broadcaster in the UK, the BBC, which of course carries no advertising at all. And so that obviously has an impact on those figures as well. But I think, you know, the UK does pretty well. I think it may almost have been the country after the US to really cotton on to podcasting back in 2003, 2004. You know, so from that point of view, I think it's done a pretty good, you know, it's had a pretty good run so far. Yeah.
So do you think the pandemic and COVID, like, because I remember there were a lot more podcasts as the pandemic was going through, loads of people starting podcasts, and I've seen influencers and people that wanted to do something else than, you know, just they wanted to get into a different medium or do something different. They started podcasts. Yeah. And I feel like there was a boom there at some point. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. But there was definitely a boom in 2020 and 2021 because, you know, podcasting was something that you could do in your own home. And apps like Riverside and Teams and Zoom made it really easy to talk with other people who also had nothing to do. And particularly if you were looking at celebrities who couldn't do any acting because all of that had gone, who couldn't do any TV shows because most of those had gone, all of a sudden it was something that they could actually do from the privacy of their own home. Mm-hmm. So it was a real jump in 2020 and 2021. But we are still seeing a lot of podcasts being made. We are still seeing a lot of active shows even now. So I think from that point of view, yes, there was a tremendous blip, but we're back to where we were in 2018, 2019. And I think that's probably a good thing. I think if you look at the growth of podcasting overall, it's this nice, steady growth. It's not a tremendous sort of hockey stick, because bad things happen with hockey sticks because you end up falling off the top. A nice steady growth means that, you know, that should continue going for many years to come. So I think, you know, we're in a pretty good place, I would have thought.
I also see that loads of businesses, right, use podcasting as a branding tool. And it really helps, you know, with the content marketing efforts they have, right? Tell me your thoughts on that. Why should a business start a podcast?
Oh, I mean, there are at least three different reasons. One reason is that it's a great place to get to know what that business is all about, get to know what that personality of that business is. If you think about the advertising that businesses have, well, you've got a poster, which you probably spend a couple of seconds looking at. You've got maybe a magazine article, if people still read magazines, which people don't spend too long looking at the advert in there. You've got TV ads and radio ads, of course. And then you've got a half-hour podcast. That is a tremendous amount of time to spend with a brand. So it's a really good way of turning occasional consumers into people that are your fans, because you understand, or they understand, what your brand is all about. So that's one of the reasons why podcasts are being made by individual brands. Another one is just a very selfish reason, really, by the person who is running those shows, is that they want a good excuse to talk to potential customers. A good excuse to talk to people that might be useful. People that might be useful to them. You know, I'd really like to interview Richard Branson and tell him what I'm doing about, you know, with my company. You can't really ring Sir Richard Branson up and say, can we have half an hour's chat? But you can by saying, will you appear on my podcast? So I think that there's quite a lot of that, to be honest, that goes on. They're pretty obvious to spot when you listen to them. So I think that that's certainly something. But I mean, you know, the other thing is just as a really good advert for that company's business, to position them as somebody that understands a particular business area, you know, really well. So if you want to be known as, you know, a really good lawyer in intellectual property, then run a podcast, because people will find you there and will understand that, you know more about this area than anyone else. So that's another really, really good idea of why you might want to consider starting doing a show.
Before we dive back into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out to SaaSPod. Not only are they the masterminds behind this podcast, but they also power dozens of other shows you know and love. SaaSPod offers a flexible pay-as-you-go podcast production service that grows with you. Whether you need help choosing the right equipment, booking guests, editing, or setting up your podcast, they've got you covered. The best part? The team at SaaSPod isn't just professional. They make the entire process fun and stress-free. If you've been sitting on a great podcast idea, now is the time to bring it to life. Visit SaaSPod.com and use the code TPF2025 to get 20% off your first production package. That's TPF2025 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the episode. Before podcasting has become so popular for businesses, people were making YouTube content, right? Which I think is still worth doing. And obviously it's great doing, even though YouTube is really, really competitive because there's so many channels and some channels have the budget on them are crazy. But what I think podcasting is, why podcasting is a unique type of content, is that you kind of like sit down and you are almost taking notes of things that are discussed, and it's more of an educational medium, in my opinion. Obviously, there's comedy podcasts and there's influencer type podcasts and all that. But when we talk about business, if you start a podcast about, you're a lawyer and you want to start a podcast, you may talk about certain issues, certain things you need to take care of when you go to court or anything like that. So that's quite interesting, and people will go and take notes, and then they're more invested, I would say. And also because it's an audio medium as well, it's easier to consume as well. You don't need to stare in the front of the computer like you would do on a YouTube channel, like a tutorial or something like that. So you can listen to it while you're cooking or while you're driving, while you do stuff like this. And I think that's really, really powerful.
Yeah, I'm having some T-shirts made up for Podcast Movement, which is a big conference that I go to every single year. And I'm having some T-shirts made up with something for your ears when your eyes are busy. That's what my definition of a podcast is, something for your ears when your eyes are busy. So that doesn't mean that it can't have video. Of course, it can have video attached to it. You can upload a show to all kinds of places if you want to. But it's the something for your ears when your eyes are busy thing that makes it into a podcast, that makes it into something that you can consume while you're out walking the dog, while you're unloading the dishwasher, while, you know, whatever it might be. And I think that that's one of the real benefits of it. Yes, it's a lean forward medium. You can actually concentrate on the audio, even if you're doing the gardening or walking to the coffee shop or whatever it happens to be. So it's a really interesting medium from that point of view. And it's something I think personally that we should be careful that we don't lose. It's very easy to make cheap TV. It's very easy to upload that onto YouTube. But if we all of a sudden require people to look at the screen all the time, like a TV show, and we say things like, as you can see from what I'm holding up to the camera right now, then it breaks everything that podcasting is so good at. And so I think we just need to tread carefully if we're going to, if we're going to upload stuff onto YouTube, which I have absolutely no trouble with. Let's just make sure that during us uploading video to YouTube or to Spotify, we don't break the audio experience, because that I think would be a mistake.
Yeah. And there's something I want to add on that. We work with clients worldwide and sometimes business clients, and we notice that everybody that comes to us, they say, I want an audio video podcast. I want to have everything. I want to have reels. I want to have literally everything. And then obviously I provide the code, and the code is not cheap, right? It takes a lot of effort. And you actually mentioned in one podcast I listened to do a bit of research for this episode, you mentioned something like, you don't need to start a video podcast necessarily, because that's going to complicate the entire process so much. Because video, there's a lot of things. Like, for example, I'm recording my podcast with a DSLR, and you need some knowledge to use a DSLR. Most people will be like, now I need to know how to use a video camera. Now I need to choose a microphone. Now, if, let's say, I need to make sure that the focus is right and the lighting is good. So, because you don't want to make a podcast that looks bad, if that makes sense. Obviously, the content is the most important thing at the end of the day, but it does also matter how it looks, especially if you're a brand. You want to look good and you want to sound good in the front of your audience and your clients, potential clients. So I always say, well, if you don't have the budget to start a video podcast, like, don't do something cheap that is not going to bring you any value. Like, focus on audio, because audio is still a very powerful way of reaching people. And that's basically the core of podcasting. Because there was a time when I was questioning myself, what is a podcast anymore? Right? Because a podcast is normally an audio podcast distributed via an RSS feed. And that's kind of like the core of what a podcast is. But now we've got video podcasts, which are normally like interviews, if that makes sense. They're not necessarily podcasts. So there's a whole.
I mean, somebody says that the definition of a podcast on YouTube is a video where you can see the microphones. And I think that's a really good definition, because that's absolutely right, isn't it?
We just need to be careful
that we don't change the whole point. You know, with a podcast, you are talking you're talking to your audience. With a video, you're talking at them. It's a very different experience. It's a very different thing. And again, if you look at podcasting, audio podcasting, 92% of people are listening alone. 92% of people don't have any other humans with them. So they have, the focus is on you. Video is not like that. Video has a lot of co-watching. Video has a lot of other people in the room that just might be watching as well. It's just a very different experience. And that's not to say that video is bad, but that's just to say that it's different. And, you know, my most tedious definition of a podcast, because there are plenty of definitions of a podcast, but my most tedious one is it on Apple Podcasts? If it is, it's a podcast. If it isn't, it's not. And it needs to be available on Open RSS so that you are in the same place as all of those other podcasts. Absolutely, stick it in many other places if you like.
Yeah.
But it kind of needs to be an Apple Podcast. But, you know, that doesn't mean that we in the podcast industry should be just sitting back and going, well, you know, we're doing our job and tough if people don't find us in podcast apps. We should be trying to make sure that we are offering more features for audiences, more things that people want to find, and more features within those podcast apps to make sure that actually they are getting just as rich an experience from their open podcast app as they might do from Spotify or from YouTube or wherever they might else be, you know, having a listen or a watch.
Mm-hmm. I really like what you said, that audio podcasting is something that you would consume by yourself. And I think that's because most people, like you mentioned in another podcast, you mentioned that most people listen to audio podcasts using headphones. That's kind of like the primary way of listening to podcasts. And I do agree with that, because you may listen to a podcast while you're commuting or while you're doing something and not necessarily sit in one chair and listen to a podcast on loudspeakers or anything. That doesn't happen usually, right? So there's loads of different stats out there, like how many podcasts are out there. And there's some crazy figures, right? Millions of podcasts and all that.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, there is, you know, a little bit of like, what, should we believe these stats, stuff like that. But from my experience, like, there are loads of podcasts that start 5 episodes, 10 episodes, they stop. They experience what we say in the industry, pod fade, right? Now, what should a podcaster do to avoid that situation of pod fade? Obviously, in my opinion, start with the idea that if you have a podcast, why you do that, and you should have a clear goal with a podcast. If you do that, I think it's more likely you're going to break through that barrier. But what other things should podcasters do to avoid this situation?
Yeah. And I think, and you are absolutely right. I think Spotify is now claiming 7 million podcasts are on that platform. The Podcast Index, which is an open index of shows, has about 4.5 million, I think. And Apple, I think, is currently claiming 2.8 million, but they don't claim that number very often. So it's quite hard to know quite where they are. But the more important number, actually, is how many are active, how many are currently being made, how many are your competitors when you are talking to podcast guests, when you are trying to launch new shows or launch new episodes. And that number is about 250,000 per month. It's not actually anywhere near as large as that million or 7 million or whatever the figure that you want to have a look is. It's only about 300,000. That's not a big number, really. But to make sure that people don't pod fade, I think the first thing is make sure that you get the workflow right. And what I mean by that is make sure that it is it's as easy as possible for you to make the show that you want to end up making. And if it's too difficult, if it's too complicated, you will burn out very, very quickly. Think of how often that show is going to come out. It needs to be consistent. So make sure that if it's going to come out every week, then make sure that it comes out every week on the same day, ideally at the same time. That's a really good, important thing. But also, secondly, make sure that you can actually do that every single week, even if you're not feeling too great. 1 week, you can still make something. So getting the workflow is right, something that I've had to deal with every single day in terms of writing a daily newsletter, is making sure that that workflow is right as well. So doing that is an important thing. Being consistent is a really important thing. But also, you know, inviting your audience to have their say. And that can be as easy as email addresses, reading out your email and saying, you know, get in touch. It can be things like buymeacoffee.com and those sorts of tipping tools. The more that you see reactions coming back from your audience, the more that you will keep on doing that particular show.
Of course.
There are lots of podcasters out there who are producing great shows, but don't really see anything other than download numbers. And that's kind of not enough for some creative people. We actually quite like hearing from our audience as well. So, you know, so really leaning into that is a good plan as well, I think.
Yeah, what you're saying is that podcasting has a community aspect to it. So you create a community of people that are listening to your show on a regular basis because it's an habitual thing. Yeah. And then they also interact with you. And if it's a business running the podcast, it interacts with your business as well. So yeah, I think that's really, really powerful. Now, in this section of the podcast, I'm going to ask you a few random questions. We're going to keep it to two because we run short on time. But basically what I have here is a box of questions.
Okay.
And nice. So basically these questions have nothing to do with podcasting.
You didn't just show that to the camera, did you?
Nah, it's here. It's right here. Right. And these questions come out randomly from this box. Normally, if I would have you here physically in the studio, I will have you pick the question, but I'll do that virtually for you.
Okay.
And the questions have nothing to do with podcasting, like I said, and they are more like generic questions to hear about, you know, your personality a little bit. So I'm just going to pick one of the questions from here. I'm going to start with this one. Let's have a look. So if someone offered you £1 million to give a speech in a language you don't know, would you do it? And how would you approach it?
Yes, I would absolutely do that. I did once do, because I do quite a fair amount of public speaking, and I did once do a conference speech in Germany. I was in, where was I? Munich, I think. And I did this particular thing by starting with a whole paragraph that I had learnt how to read in German.
Wow.
And the way that I'd learned how to read it in German was to go to Google Translate, type it in English, look at it in German, and then listen, because you can press the little speaker button, listen to how the German lady said it. Mm-hmm. And then I impersonated the German lady saying all of the words. And I ended up saying something like, you know, I'm very pleased to be here in Germany. I've flown a long way to be here. I'm a very lazy English person, and I didn't learn any German at school whatsoever. So apologies for being an idiot, and I'm now going to speak in English.
That's pretty cool. That's a way to win the audience. That's
yeah,
for sure.
And they were delighted with that. So I'm sure for £1 million, I'm sure that I could sit and learn a complete speech. That would be fun to do.
But would you learn the language, or would you actually learn the speech as a?
No, I would learn it phonetically. Like I would just listen to the words being said. Interestingly, though, I have actually made, so I do a daily podcast every single day, which is called the Pod News Daily, which is the same stuff as in the newsletter, really, as a podcast. Mm-hmm. There have been occasions where I have translated that whole thing into a bunch of different languages. Japanese, mm-hmm. Arabic, I think I did Norwegian once.
So how
I think
did you do
Spanish
that?
Once. So there are a number of these tools which allow you to take your voice, clone your voice, and then get your voice to then speak the translated words. And I played my Japanese one to a Japanese friend of mine. And he was amazed. Not only, you know, was it pretty good, and but still recognizably me speaking mm-hmm. Japanese, but also he could actually tell which island I was from because I had an accent.
An accent.
You know, that's good. So
he was basically yeah. you speaking Japanese. I think this script can do that, right?
Yeah, so I think I used Wondercraft, which will let you do that. But yeah, there are a bunch of tools which will do that. So that's a bit of a cheat. I'm not necessarily sure that I will get my £1 million, but there are technological ways to actually get that done.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a little story as well about languages. So in school, I'm from Romania originally, and in school we learned French. The course was called bilingual French. So I would have 1 hour of French per day. So that would be 5 hours a week. So I was not interested in learning French. I liked the language, the way it sounds, but I didn't like it. And probably I didn't like the way it was like enforced on me in a way, right? I think yeah. that's something that I wanted to stay away from it. And however, I'm coming from a musical background, and at high school, they tried to promote the school through music, and they would use me as a talented person that could go to different festivals and to just represent the school, the high school, at these different festivals. And I had to learn a song in French, but I didn't know anything at all when it comes to this language. So I had to phonetically memorize the entire song, and I still remember some of the words. I think the song was called La Belle Demoiselle or something like that. I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing this well. So I went to this festival, and we were late at that festival 1 day late, and they discussed certain things 1 day before that we're going to do some sort of show on stage and it's going to be all fun. And when we ask you, you know, to come on the stage and participate into that show, make sure that you come on stage and make sure that you do what you we are telling you right now to do. So yeah. that happened yeah, 1 day before. So that day we were in the crowd, and they had said, okay, now let's come on stage, let's have the actual show happening. And then me and two girls, we didn't know what that's all about. I didn't understand that we need to get on stage. And my French teacher would push me like, go on stage, you need to go there. And everybody started dancing in an organized way and also singing and picking up instruments. And me and the two girls, we were there in the middle of the stage, didn't know what's happening, like, because we didn't know like anything about that situation. So what we end up doing mid-show, we just decided to run off the stage and started laughing like crazy because it was such an awkward situation, and I still remember it. And every time when I'm thinking about that, it was like one of the most awkward thing that happened to me when it comes to languages. So yeah.
Yes. Yes, quite an interesting one. Gosh, well, that doesn't sound like fun.
It's not. So let's go next one. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting one. So if you could instantly master one skill unrelated to your career, what would it be?
I'd love to be able to play the piano. I have a theory that if you learnt to type really early, then actually typing is the opposite of piano playing, because typing is, you know, you're doing this quite a lot of the time. You're typing with different fingers all the time rather than all together. And I have a feeling that my own personal opinion is that if you learn how to type really early, that means that you can't play the piano at all.
That's wrong.
I don't know whether that's true.
I play the piano and I type extremely fast. And I'm a millennial, so I started with computers basically in 2005, something like that. And I started learning piano around that age as well. So I started like using computers and learning piano at the same time. But I would feel like no, like they are very different things. So you can definitely learn piano. So I would encourage you to do that. So it's a great, yeah, it's a great thing to do. How do you think AI is influencing podcasting at the moment? How can people use AI to do something useful with it in podcasting? There's transcription tools, there's like we talked about, you know, voice cloning and all that. Do you believe in the idea of complete AI podcasts? Do you think that that's valuable?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they're particularly valuable, to be honest, because at the end of the day, the AI is just a glorified autocorrect tool. It's sitting there and working out what it should, you know, what it should say, rather than coming up with any interesting ideas. So I'm not sure that they're particularly useful in terms of that, but certainly AI tools, really helpful and useful shortcuts to get rid of some of the non-creative stuff from your workflow. And again, comes back to workflow. It's something that I believe in quite strongly. If you can get rid of the more tedious things that aren't creative, so you can be more creative, then all of a sudden that's a really good thing. And if you can use AI to do that, or just code a tool to get rid of some of that, or however it is that you want to end up doing that, I think that that makes the most amount of sense. So from my point of view, AI is really useful when you're using it to do things like give you first ideas for what this show title is going to be and what the description is going to be. Can you get AI to do a transcription of this show and then summarize that down into three paragraphs for the description for an episode? Mm-hmm. Great. You know, that's absolutely, you know, a really useful use of that tech. Similarly, you know, AI driven tools that allow you to tidy up audio, for example, that allow you to do, the platform that we're on has AI tools that would mix all of the different camera feeds for you, for example. All of those, absolutely great. I think taking the human being away completely is probably a mistake. And I think, you know, it's probably the difference in the 1990s. It's the difference between a drum machine, which a lot of pop songs had, and Milli Vanilli, who you might remember, you're probably not old enough, but they were a band that all of the girls were in love with. And it turned out that they were just miming their songs, and actually somebody else was singing their songs for them. Mm-hmm. It's that difference between using AI as a tool and using AI to replace the human being. And I think, you know, AI can be really, really useful as long as we don't cross that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do agree with that as well, because I've been using AI in the podcast production space, and I've seen the limitations of it and also the things that can really help you to do more. Right. So I think that's kind of like the thing, do more, but still do it well. And in order to make sure that it's done well, you need to be involved in the entire process and making sure that everything is done properly. So, for example, one thing that I've been using AI for is taking the transcription, turn that into an article. But you need to make sure that when you do that, you restrict the AI to do certain things that are off topic or anything like that. And then obviously you need to go through the entire thing. And I would rewrite 50% of it, basically.
It's just
a structure thing that I get from AI to help me out with the ideation, but not necessarily replace me completely. I don't think that's good.
Indeed. But it can be very useful as a first draft. It can be very useful to ask, as I've done occasionally, you know, I'm interviewing this person, what questions should I be asking him? Mm-hmm. Probably wouldn't use any of those questions, but I might find out more about that person.
Okay, so last question, and I think you will be a great person to ask this because you've been podcasting yourself and you run Podfade and so many other things. One opportunity most podcasters don't take that could improve their discoverability. Because some podcasts, probably they're great shows, but they don't appear everywhere, or they, like, they're not discovered. Obviously, you want to be on all the different platforms possible. Definitely be on Podcast Index, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all this stuff. But maybe there's something that you have that people are missing.
The first thing I would say is just make sure you've got a good description for what your show is all about. A lot of people find podcasts through search. And if you are looking for a podcast through search, you're not going to find it if your entire description is just one line that probably says something like, you know, real talk from real talk from Bogdan. That's not going to help. It's interesting when you look at some of the most successful shows, some of them have really detailed descriptions of the sort of thing that you'll find in those shows and the sort of guests that they've had and everything else, because the show description is one of those things that appears in Apple Podcast search and in Spotify search. So making sure that those are done correctly, and then making sure that the episode information has all of has as much information in there as you possibly can, that's a really important thing, apart from obviously making sure that you're in as many of the podcast platforms as possible. So I think that that's a great first step. But I also think that the other thing is to use the tools that your podcast host gives you and use all of them as much as you can. So there are lots of podcast hosts, for example, that are looking into some of the new tools that Podcasting 2.0 offers, some of the new features that that thing offers, and that might be information about guests, which you can put in your RSS feed. That might be information about location. If you're doing a particular show about Tate Britain, then, you know, you can actually get that location as a tag into your RSS feed, and that will help people find your particular show if they're just looking for a podcast about that place or that type of place, you know, an art gallery in London, then they can find that. So there are a bunch of these additional tools that a lot of podcast hosts will let you use, which really can benefit people finding your show, whether it's now, whether it's in 6 months' time. So, so I would definitely, you know, make the most of those. I think that that's a, you know, a super useful thing to end up doing.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being on the show. If people want to get in touch with you, where they can find you?
Yeah, so podnews.net is the website. Podnews is free for you to get in your inbox every day, in your email inbox. So just go in there and type your email address in, and away you go. So that's all good. But also, you can find a little bit more about me and some of my radio stuff at my personal website, which is james.cridland.net.
Amazing. Thank you, James, for being on the show.
It's been a great pleasure. We talked about language earlier, so I'd just like to say vă mulțumesc pentru invitație.
Cu plăcere, cu plăcere, James. Awesome. Amazing. So thank you so much. Guys, if you love the show, make sure that you follow us on all the podcast players, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it. And also subscribe to our YouTube channel, because this podcast is going to be uploaded as a video podcast as well. So if you're listening to the audio podcast, if you want to rewatch this as a video program, you can do that as well. So thank you so much for joining, and I'll see you again in 2 weeks on Wednesday. Goodbye.